we start trudging. Me and my brothers, we be looking and be bugging. Vehicles of life, they be rolling and be nudging. Searching for the virgins of life, let me shoving at the door that's cracked. The valleys of time are always on my feet. At least the beat will combine the calluses and horns with a funky bass line. You won't need underdog for a nickel shoe shine on the shoes that's stacked. But can I get a level on the bass and on the treble? Footing up and down like a UNLV rebel. The answer be ambitious, for we really dig acoustics. Can't be too much tracking, not too much backing. You must contain the neck, at least to dip your hips in that. Your feet will be infectious, so at least realize the fact. The rhythms are inserted and the nerves can be converted. This ain't rock and roll, cause the rap is in control. If you're a megastar, will you buy you a car? I'd rather go get footing, footprints I will be putting. All over the earth, if we can get there first. Now that we are in it, footprints will be your printing. So if you recognize them, you can try to size them. They'll probably be the ones with the size not flying. All over the field, you won't have to yield. If you want protection, you can hop behind a shield.
Back one mo again. We got a Bad News Ramen in front of me over here right now on the stick. Better have my donuts. And we're doing this on a Thursday, which is
a Thursday.
Yeah, but it's out of the ordinary. But you know,
we're doing it on a Thursday, which is a Thursday,
which is true. We usually try to get this on a Tuesday, but you know,
had to drive. What, 200 miles, 250 miles in one day and stuff? Yeah.
Yeah,
good times. Yeah, and then they go, it's not good times. It's funny that we put Dusty in the other day. It's hard times, yeah. You drive, you wake up at 3:55 in the morning, only to drive 2 hours all the way to King City, baby. And then you have to drive back, daddy, and that's 4 hours on the road, daddy, not on account of the work that you had to do, daddy. And then 2 days later, they tell you they got to make your job a part-time job. That's hard times, daddy. That's hard times. That got me through. And the funny thing was I listened to the Stone Cold podcast with Dusty Rhodes.
And
he played. So it's a little bit of foreshadowing. Yeah. So anybody that can hook me up with a job, I'm a world-class designer. Visual designer, graphic artist, if you will. I've also run websites in the past, and you know, I do have 506 followers on Twitter as compared to your 49. So if anybody has a lineup for a job, I'm your man over here. So
on the mothership.
on the mothership, yeah. But that is hard time. So now that we got the bad and we have some decor on here.
It was went along the lines like this, I think. It was he drove the 2 hours to King City. He did his job. He came home. And then, I've got some bad news for you.
Nice. So a lot of things broke down this week. My car didn't break down because I was smart enough to take it to the shop, you know, and drop a couple hundred.
I took you to the shop.
That was my other car. Oh. That was the van. I took the I took the wagon. I took the
shoebox.
I took the pussy wagon to get an oil change and stuff. And there was no bad news with that because the guy actually takes care of me. You know, I take care of him. He takes care of me. A lot of business should probably follow the example. You know, if you take care of someone, should probably take care of him back. So I don't know if he, and I really don't know about this. Like, I know they had the big announcement on Wednesday, and I it was leaked that it was the WWE Network. But right. I mean, is this free or do you got to pay for it? You know.
So yeah, so it's $9.99 a month, which is really good. Like, I've been following it because I've been considering. You know, I wanted to see. I think initial reports were saying it's probably gonna be around $15 a month, and then the hook for me was they were saying that. That $15 a month might include the pay-per-views, except for WrestleMania. So when it all now broke out, it's now $9.99 a month and includes all the pay-per-views, including WrestleMania.
It's $9.99 a month, and you get the pay-per-views for free?
Yep.
Damn.
to quote John Jeff Farmer, yep.
I was thinking more of the two black guys from Airplane. She, golly.
So you get that. My understanding, I've read a couple of reports, so, and I don't know if anything's super clear, but my understanding is it's not so much a channel as it's essentially like an on-demand, like a Netflix. So you can queue up like any old pay-per-view then they'll have some kind of original programming.
But you don't need to, like, say, for someone that lives in the heart of Silicon Valley, such as myself, and see how the company that I work for pays me very minimally, so I can't really afford, you know, on top of that, and then they want to cut me down to, I don't even know why I'm saying this, but, you know, they want to cut me down to part-time. But see, now we're in the heart of Silicon Valley, right? And in downtown San Jose, right, there is no Wi-Fi service at all. The only way you can get Wi-Fi is you have to go through Comcast. And Bad News Ramen hates Comcast. I can't stand Comcast.
I don't know. Oh, because you can't get U-verse out here?
Why would I do U-verse, dude?
It's better than Comcast, and I got Wi-Fi.
I'm a DirecTV guy, dude. So DirecTV doesn't, they don't know. They don't have any satellites pointing at me.
So don't say that you can't get Wi-Fi in San Jose. You just say you've selected the wrong cable provider. To quote one mean gene.
If I have to use U-verse, just put me away now, dude. I hate U-verse. I don't like U-verse. I don't like Comcast.
You had U-verse?
Huh? I know people that have U-verse, and I'm not impressed. If it wasn't for Mr. Fuji, you two couldn't get dressed. Wait, is this? Do you have U-verse?
Yeah.
Oh, and you have the East Coast. Yeah, you have the West Coast feed for wrestling, right?
I do.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yay, U-verse.
Yeah,
dude.
That would be my one complaint. Please. I had the East Coast.
There we go. Hey, this is coming from a guy.
Yeah, I had the East Coast
No.
All the way up until like halfway through last year.
Listen, all of a sudden, this is coming from a guy when he called Comcast way back when. All right, the very first, and this was like in the maybe late 90s. The first question I asked is like, do you have USA? And they're like, yes, I do. And like, yes, we do. I'm like, okay, do you have, it was TNA back then, right? Not TNA. What was the name of the?
Oh, TNN.
TNN, yeah. I'm like, do you guys have TNN? That was the first thing that came out. Those are the questions I asked. So I ain't watching no flipping West Coast feed for wrestling, dude. And that's worth the price right there. If you can't give me live flipping wrestling when it's live, I have nothing to do with you.
Except for you can't have Wi-Fi.
But I can't have Wi-Fi, yeah.
Is that a fair trade-off in your eyes?
Yeah, okay. It is. Because I've worked it out. You know, I'm not happy about it. But does it work like Netflix where you have to stream it?
Or? That's what it sounds like. Okay. I'm not 100% on that. But from what I've read, that's kind of what it sounds like. It is, you would stream it. And then you could just go to the network, and then you go on demand, whatever shows you want to see. And, oh, the other big hook, you get NXT.
Oh, yeah, with Hulu. I mean, the previous way you could only get was through Hulu Plus, right?
Right. So you can get Superstars, which I wouldn't care about, but I would definitely want to see NXT, and I'm getting the free pay per views. So, you know, I'm a word guy more than a numbers guy. Yeah. I haven't actually calculated out, but I mean, I'm sure
you're not Jesse the Body Ventura, like figuring out the price of pretzels.
No, but I'm basically I'm pretty sure that. I'll figure out some way that, you know, if I were to order two pay-per-views in a year, it probably ends up paying for itself to just get the network, and it's like $9.99. You got to do it, you got to buy a 6-month subscription at a time. So, I mean, I'm thinking that's probably going to be a wise investment.
Yeah, $60. So it's $120 a year.
Yep.
And then how many? They have like a pay-per-view every month, right?
Right.
For the most part.
So, yeah. So you get 12. You get 12 pay-per-views. And it was even interesting because the article I was reading, the guy was saying he couldn't really understand if they're giving away the pay-per-views, how that network's going to make money, right? But he says, you know, obviously WWE, you know, that's their business, is making money. So I'm sure they must have figured it out. But it does sound like, I'm kind of wondering, you know, do they think they're going to get that many subscribers? I don't know. But I think at $99, I think it's a steal.
Well, like Hulu Plus is like how much? It's probably like $10 a month or something like that.
I don't know anything. I've never investigated.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably something like that. Mm-hmm. And you get NXT, which you have to pay for anyways. And then on top of that, you know, if you have people that are going to get the free pay per views, well, you're going to have people that are still going to buy the pay per views too. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, that sounds pretty good. I don't know. It sounds pretty good. It's like the two cottages that Wyatt Earp bought. You know, the three cottages that Wyatt Earp bought in Tombstone. You know. I don't know. Sounds pretty good.
You going to throw in a free cleaning for me?
Free cleaning? Yeah. Is that what
BN?
BN? I don't think so, BN. I don't think I'm going to let you arrest us today. So the other thing, of course, that happened this week, kind of thrown out of left field, was your girl, Caitlin, decided to
hang up.
Retire.
Retire, yeah.
I'm going to miss her. I'm going to miss her inverted... stomach crunch, dude.
Yeah, I don't. I don't know, man. I mean, I liked Caitlyn. I didn't think she was any great shakes in the ring. I thought she had a lot of potential.
You know what was the most overused tweet about Caitlyn? It went along something like this. As we go a little something like this. Hit it. Okay, so it goes, Matt, how can you give me the Dougie Fresh on that, dude? What the hell?
Well, that's true. That's why we never have.
You're supposed to be doing the beatbox.
I was vaping, dude.
Yeah, you're vaping, okay. What's
you
vaping?
You caught me mid-vape.
Mid-vape. you're trying to beatbox. You're like...
I better have my donuts. Where were you when I needed the beatbox? I was buying a pretzel.
So the most overused tweet was that, you know, went along the lines of like, oh, Caitlyn left the WWE. Good job of redoing the Diva Division WWE. And Eva Marie has a job. Oh, great job. It's like, dude, it has nothing to do with that. So, like, PWI was reporting that, Caitlyn thought that she was going to be involved in some storylines that never came to fruition. And then she wanted to pursue other interests and stuff. So, I mean, it wasn't like she was, I mean, that's like, you know, right now, Caitlyn leaving the WWE is like, Layla leaves the WWE. If Layla leaves the WWE, I'd be like, make sure that she gets some flipping help for her roofies problem because she's on something.
Yeah,
you know,
well, Vince is very good at paying for the rehab for the former talent. So I'm sure that'll be taken care of.
Allegedly,
yeah. But I mean, she wasn't getting tremendously better. Her storylines weren't going anywhere. And from everything I'm hearing, even though I've never seen any NXT, sounds like the people are pretty high on the Divas division down there. There's a lot of talk about this Paige,
yeah.
This Paige girl being really talented. Maybe go ahead and let Caitlyn go and see if one of these Divas or a couple of the Divas down in NXT can come up and do something. She had plenty of chances. She was okay. I liked her, but you know, I'm not gonna cry over this one.
Yeah, you're not gonna pour a brew.
I'm not putting my head in the oven. Put it that way.
All right. So.
That was kind of out of left field, but you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
I'd much rather have Eva Torres come back.
Yeah,
I'd take Eva Torres.
Well, I don't think that's happening anytime soon.
No, but I was broken up like 100 times more on the departure
of
Wendy Torres.
You threw down the keys when you Torres. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, Paige, she ain't too bad to, she ain't bad to, she's easy on the ice.
Yeah.
Very, very easy on the ice. So, yeah.
There's another one down there that almost looks like an Eve Torres clone. It's like a Dev Tyler or something like that. I don't know what her in-ring abilities are, but got a lot of talent.
As long as they don't try to bring up have Coco Beware sing the national anthem again. That's that diva, name of that diva on the TV show, right? The small little thing, Coco Beware. What's her name? Jojo Beware. There we go. That's what it is. Jojo Beware.
You know her real name.
What is it?
Jojo Offerman.
Is it Jose Offerman's
yes, it
daughter?
Is. So as long as she doesn't throw a bat at anybody, things should be okay.
Yeah, as long as she stays away from the Roys, she should be okay.
Maybe she should actually have Jose Offerman be her manager, and he could throw a bat at somebody.
that'd be the gimmick.
That'd be the gimmick.
Louisville Slugger! Louisville Slugger! Louisville Slugger! Why'd you say it twice? Three times. It's my gimmick, son.
My gimmick, son.
So, all right. So what do you want to get into? So we have a...
In trying to stay with our avoidance of doing, I don't want to do a whole breakdown of old school Raw. I thought it was all right. I actually kind of enjoyed seeing Too Cool, which I've never really liked them, but for the one time, for the one off,
you liked what's his name?
I like Rikishi, but
you liked Christopher Dance and stuff. I remember you were
not really.
Maybe you were high during that time because you used to try to do it all the time, and you'd wipe the goggles and stuff and everything. Now you liked it. You liked him in the video game. You used to put him on the guys in the video game and stuff.
I was fine with their taunts for certain people for the game, but
okay.
Them as performers, I was never really into it, but for a one-off nostalgia act, it wasn't too bad. But what I did think that, bored discussion was CM Punk versus Roman Reigns. Just because, you know, this is now the first time that we've actually seen Roman Reigns go against CM Punk after they've had a few with Ambrose, a couple with Rollins, And I just want to know your take on it. Like, for me, I'd say I thought the match was pretty good. It was.
You want to know my take before you say anything, or what? Because we'll probably. I mean, I'm just asking because
you can go first, and then I'll say what I gotta say.
I thought it was kind of a letdown, to tell you the truth. I mean, I think it kind of showed how good Rollins is. It really shows how good. I mean, we knew Ambrose was good. We know Rollins is good, but it really, to me, it really kind of showed that Reigns is really made for tag team right now. I mean, I just felt it was a really slow paced match. The last 5 minutes I thought were really good when they started turning up the heat. But I don't know if it's so much. You know, I mean, we kind of like, you know, we give a lot of credit to CM Punk when say he goes against a Cena or goes against a guy that we don't like. But to tell you the truth, I mean, I really didn't get a lot from Roman Reigns in terms of I thought he did fine, but I really kind of want to say, like, Punk really didn't. The storytelling with Punk really wasn't there. I don't think it was one of Punk's greater matches, and I don't think he elevated Roman Reigns. And it really kind of made me think, too, because I was looking at the Rollins match, and there's a lot of high spots in that Rollins match, mostly by Rollins. And I'm just kind of thinking, like, we had this discussion before, like, do you like the high spot matches, say, like, a really good Poresu match, you know, a Japanese style match where they have just high spot after high spot, or even an indie match where it's high spot, ROH, high spot after high spot. And I think it kind of lends credence to that. I really like Rollins against CM Punk, but I really like Rollins versus Cena, and there was a ton of high spots there too. And I've been kind of coming around just a tad small bit on Cena. I thought he really did the job well for Rollins. I would really be interested to see what type of match that Reigns would have with Cena. I think maybe Reigns is more tailored for a Cena match than, say, like a CM Punk match.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that it did, of the three Shield versus Punk matches, I think that definitely Ambrose and Rollins had the more exciting matches. Like, it was much better technical matches, as I think you would expect. And I think you kind of hit it on the head a little bit, and you didn't directly say it, but I think, as you kind of thought about it, like, Rollins carried the match with CM Punk more than CM Punk did. And I will kind of agree that CM Punk didn't do anything tremendous to make Reigns look really good. But, you know, you wouldn't expect Roman Reigns to be as technical as Ambrose or as Rollins.
Well, I thought Rollins had a better match with Cena than with CM Punk. I really like that. I mean, right now, and I'm sorry I cut you off, right now it just seems to me that CM Punk is really, like, fatigued and tired. Mm-hmm. And I don't think his heart's in it right now. Mm-hmm. But go ahead.
But I did kind of, it also made me think back, because the last time I remember seeing Roman Reigns in any kind of similar type of match was when Daniel Bryan was on his hot run, and they had a great main event. And so, you know, I don't think I'm prepared to go and say that Rollins is not yet ready to break off and be a singles guy, because, like, going back to that Daniel Bryan, you know, obviously everybody can have a good match with Daniel Bryan, but he has done some really good singles matches. I think you're right, but I think if him and Punk had another singles match, then I think they could probably figure it out and do it a little bit better, because it was a different type of match, right? Because when you get Rollins and CM Punk, you know it's going to be technical, and it's going to go back and forth both ways. On this match between Reigns and Punk, like it was different because CM Punk had to work from underneath, right? Like he had to get physically dominated for a while and then make his comeback and stuff like that. Whereas, you know, Punk's never going to be physically dominated by Rollins or Ambrose for that matter.
So what does that say about CM Punk then? Because he's had technical matches with guys that are, like, say with a Daniel Bryan, where he's the more physically imposing guy. And I'm trying to look back at some of the matches that he's had, and he's always kind of, I mean, I think the first time that I really kind of started watching his matches when he got on his crazy run, it was like the first time I've seen him do his stuff. Mm-hmm. And I kind of went back through kind of the older matches, you know, off of his DVD when he was still learning the WWE style. So I'm just, you know, yeah, I mean, I don't want to put the nail in Reigns. That's the easy way out. I mean, it's the easy way out. So, like, well, if he can't have a good match with CM Punk, then this, that, and this. I think the standard now is that if you can't have a good match with
Daniel Bryan,
that's really kind of the stepping stone. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I mean, you know, I'll take that back, because I think Punk and Undertaker was a good match. I don't think it was a great match like everybody said it was, but I thought it was a very entertaining match. Mm-hmm. And I really think that was just based off of CM Punk alone in terms of, I'm not saying that Undertaker didn't do his job, but, you know, CM Punk made you believe that he could beat The Undertaker when nobody else, we all knew that Undertaker was going to win, but there were certain moments in that match where you're like, well, maybe CM Punk can win, and that's when he kind of started getting into the match. So he has faced physically dominant guys, like, in terms of a Brock Lesnar and everything. I want to say, you know, we kind of, when CM Punk has a good match with John Cena, we say, like, well, it was good because 70% Cena, 30%, or 70% CM Punk, 30% John Cena. You know, I'm more of this case where it's like, when they have a good match, it's going to be 60% CM Punk, 40% Cena. I'd say the reason why the match doesn't live up to expectations, I mean, I'd probably do, like, maybe I'd probably say, like, 50-50. You know, I think CM Punk didn't have a good match. I don't think Reigns had a good match. But again, the last 5 minutes of that match was really good. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a drawn out epic. You know, where we have like Flair versus Steamboat or Daniel Bryan versus CM Punk or whatever it is. You know, Goldust versus whoever. You know, or even Luke Harper versus say Daniel Bryan. It didn't have that type of pacing in it. It was a really really slow. And, you know, maybe you lend to the fact that, you know, you had a New Age Outlaws there, too. I mean,
I would have really liked if they had put a New Age Outlaws against Reigns and Ambrose as a tag team match. That, I thought, would have been great.
That's why I didn't like Too Cool, because I wanted to see, I'd rather see New Age Outlaws instead of Too Cool, but, you know.
Yeah, no, I would have much preferred to see that match, but I was fine with it. It was good for me. It was good to see Rikishi again, and then for a one off, I can deal with their little gimmick for a little bit.
There. Well, the best part about that match with Too Cool was you know, we did play the WWE game on the Nintendo 64 a lot. I think it was No Mercy, and it was the one before that. I think they call it WrestleMania 2000, whatever. And me and the producer used to play that game all the time. And so when the Too Cool song came out or whatever, I'd always, you know, this goes far, far back. Like when we played Legend of Zelda, there was this game called Legend of Zelda. It wasn't called Wind Walker or any of the stuff. It was the actual like Legend of Zelda game. And you'd go into the dungeon, and then we would make our own, not the Bret Hart's dungeon, but you'd have to go to all these dungeons, you know, to get like the silver bow and the flute,
the labyrinths.
Yeah, and I started it where it was the Shining Armor song. It was like, you know, I had this whole song based on the music of the labyrinth. So
he added the lyrics.
Yeah,
so you had some lyrics for the Too Cool songs.
Well, it always sounded like a. Let's hibernate. So it'd be like, na, 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 na. So, let's hibernate. Da, na, na. So me and the producer would be playing, and like that song would come on because it'd probably be like during the rumble part, you know, where they're counting people off, because we had never played with Too Cool, but that song would come on, and so there'd always be a hibernate in there somewhere. So I'm sitting there watching them with their entrance, and I'm like, oh yeah, I remember the song, and I just start busting out, let's hibernate. Da, da. So that was a good memory right there.
All right,
maybe two inside, but hey, I just got dropped down to 25 hours part time, so I can do what I want around here.
That's your little memory, man.
a little bit.
Yeah. What'd you think of the Daniel Bryan or the Wyatt family situation? That seemed like a really odd match to me.
It was funny. I enjoyed the match, and I really liked. I mean, I liked the end. I really did. I mean, I think it worked on two levels, because Daniel Bryan tags in. He's all ready to go. I mean, you know, you're waiting for the Daniel Bryan like House of Fire, you know, hot tag, and you know he's going to kick ass for 5 minutes, and the crowds are going to get all into it, right? And then Luke Harper slaps him, stops him from doing it, and then they lose. So I thought it worked well on both parts, because it extends the storyline, mm-hmm. but it really cuts off Daniel Bryan in terms of being the fan favorite where everybody can cheer for him. You know, it kind of stopped that whole element too.
You think that's intentional?
I think, you know, that'd be giving a lot of credit to the WWE, but yeah, I think it is. I think it was intentional. It was a double switch, you know. It was the double turn right there. You know, it's like you stop us from cheering for Daniel Bryan, and then Harper loses, which was really surprising. I really liked that he lost. I was kind of surprised. I was like, you know, what the hell's going on? You know, it's like, I was surprised that Rey Mysterio didn't pin him, you know? I was surprised that it was the Uso that actually did it because Harper, you know, Eric Rowan had to sell the little El Torito to the teeth over there, dude.
That was, I mean, and that really what turned me off to that match was like Rey Mysterio coming in and doing his ridiculous little moveset on.
Well, he comes in with his pajamas, and I'm like, dude, like at least get dressed for a wrestling match. Well,
I could look past that. I don't even care.
I can't.
I could look past that if the guy could actually do a move that I could actually buy. But he can't, and then especially when you're going to make him do it against Aaron Rowan or whatever, it's just, yeah, just enough with this, dude. Let
put him to pasture.
Yeah, he's done. He's been done. He needs the big Brady Quinn to come in and tell him now I'm done.
Now I'm done.
That's that. So I got nothing else about Rey Mysterio.
Okay,
but just yeah, I just thought it was weird. It seemed, I think that I felt that it was weird because it didn't follow the typical WWE predictable storyline. And that might actually be a good thing, but it kind of get the feeling like it makes me even think that it's possible that Daniel Bryan is just in the Wyatt family to try to cause havoc to them. And I think that could be a possibility, that maybe it's not a long-term thing that he's going to be with the Wyatt family. But it was weird. You usually think that you make a big turn like that, and a team with as much momentum as the Wyatts have, they're going to come in and squash on their first match. And when they didn't, it was one of those times where I was really surprised that they lost the match. And then there's just like an odd ending to me, probably just because I didn't expect it.
Yeah.
But then I think that they cleaned it up very well in the promo segment that they had afterwards when Daniel Bryan was like, hey, you know, you guys got to trust me. Like, you know, this is why I'm here. And then Bray said, "Well, you're tagging with me next week. Like that, I like that part."
And you're going to watch it next week too. Yeah. Okay. And there's a, you know, if he loses Bray Wyatt, then that opens up a whole other storyline. So there's a lot of ways you can go.
Right.
And that's the WWE universe that I like, John Cena. You know, it's like the one where it's like you can have two or three storylines come out of one match. Mm-hmm. And this match with them losing, you have about three possibilities that can happen next week, and I'm going to watch next week. I mean, that's a match that I'm looking forward to.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing was that before Bryan went with the Wyatt family, I really didn't care. I didn't mind that he wrestled, but I didn't look forward to him wrestling every week. You know, and so
I look forward to the matches all the time, but
I like the matches.
Like the story wasn't really going anywhere. Right?
Yeah. I mean, I liked watching them, but it wasn't like I never sat there and said, I'm going to watch Raw because I want to see Daniel Bryan perform. I already knew he was going to perform. I know he's going to put on a good match. But now at least he's involved in a storyline that I can get my mind to, you know, with like the hose and the hosen and the Al Cortina and the Dolphins.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's there's a possibility that there's, you know, if he loses, that opens up a whole other set of storylines, whether it's a short-term thing with Daniel Bryan, whether it's long-term. I really don't care because it's working right now, and I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I liked it too, and yeah, I like the fact that it's not a predictable storyline that you can see coming 10 miles down the road, right? Like, there's a lot of possibilities for twists and turns. And then you also have this whole element of the Royal Rumble coming up in a couple of weeks. And anything can happen coming out of a Rumble.
Him joining the Wyatt family had all the makings of your typical bad storyline.
And burial.
Yeah, and he comes out with the family, and he's dressed all different. His attitude is different somewhat, but it was pretty flippin' neat. You know, it was when they come out, and even the, you know, when it's the video and it's like, we're here, and I'm like looking to see if
Daniel Bryan
is he there, right? And then you see the first of all, because my girls love that entrance, and they love the whole thing, and we went to sushi tonight, right? And my wife came back from a hair appointment or whatever, and so she was just going to pick us up, so she texts me and she says, here. So I go in the car, I'm like, hey, next time that you do that, just type in, we're here. And she's like, oh, like that one family or whatever, like the goat face guy or whatever it was. I'm like, yeah, you got to do, we're here. So it was,
did you tell her she also has to blow out a halogen lantern?
Well, I did the blowing sound.
You went up to the light over there and went,
Yeah, but I botched it. I SIM card it right there. SIM card was on the light. He botched it. I was like, "Hey, dude, what's going on?"
You tried to turn the light off, and it went to the black light.
I don't think you understand.
It went to the purple lighting.
I don't think you understand what blowing. I don't think you understand what blowing means. You know, how you got the job at WPAOs. But anyway, so there was drama with that video package, and then they come out. And then you're still looking for him. Then he comes out, and it's just like, yeah, that works really well. And but at the same time, it's like it could have been like everything else. It could have been the typical thing. It was like, look at him, you know, he's like he's in a trance or whatever it was. But he was still himself. He was still the guy he was. And you're waiting for that big payoff for him to come in and clean house, and it didn't happen. And they lose. It was good. That was some good programming right there. Very good. Very well done.
Yeah.
Good job. Good job, WWE. Good. Yeah. I'm over fucking whelmed over here. No, but in all seriousness, I thought it was really good.
You got some good news for me. Decorum, please. All right, so I actually did your homework assignment. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, let's see. I want to talk about that first.
Okay.
We'll do the match now. Okay. And then there's a question that I want to spin after we do that. So okay. I went.
So let's introduce. You got to be professional. You got to introduce the segment. So we usually have this. Excuse me.
Very professional.
Very professional. Yeah. You got to be professional. I smell a rat. So if anybody can say what promo that was, then I got a lot of respect for you because not a lot of people get that promo. Usually towards the end, we're usually doing it pretty fast off the seat of our pants and stuff because we're hitting like an hour and 40 and we're like, man, we got to get this match in. So we always try to pick a match that we remember growing up and what kind of matches that we do remember. So I don't know if we mentioned what it was.
Not on the air.
Okay, so
that was
your homework was?
It was to go back and watch the I Quit match between Ric Flair and Terry Funk from... I think it was Clash of Champions.
Yeah, 1989 or something, 88?
Could have been. I didn't see what the date was. So it was kind of an interesting match.
Did you see the whole lead up to that match? Do you know what happened before that match?
No.
Okay, so as a quick history lesson, so you had the infamous Ric Flair Ricky the Dragon Steamboat trilogy of matches, right?
That this is right on the heels of the
match. Yeah. Okay. So what it was the last match they had four judges. One of them was an old-time wrestler. Then you had Terry Funk. And then in the infinite wisdom, you had Jason Hervey or Harvey from the Wonder Years, the older brother. He was there. And then there was some hot TBS chick, you know, at the time or whatever. And the best part of that was that Harvey?
I think it's Hervey.
Hervey, yeah. Hervey was like talking to her and pointing stuff out, like, in the match to help her, like, judge, right?
Uh-huh.
So, Flair, of course, wins, and then Steamboat's walking out. And Steamboat kind of said, like, you know, I thought this was going to extend for another... We could do, like, another two matches. I thought this was going to extend for another 2-3 months because it was that good. And then he looks back, and Funk's in the ring, and Funk is starting to go up. Because Funk was playing the babyface, a really good babyface, kind of like, welcome back, Funk, and stuff. And then he just goes off the deep end and just attacks Ric Flair like crazy. And he tries to pile drive. Now, this is, like... late 80s, before all the ECW stuff, before all the AKA hardcore stuff. This is kind of where they, in the hyperbolic chamber known as wrestling, this is where they say that...
Hardcore started.
Hardcore started, which kind of is, but...
Funk is kind of the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he tries, he puts Flair up in a pile driver position, right? Mm-hmm. He pile drives him on the table. The table doesn't break. Okay. So you know that part.
And then is that where they came with the story that his neck was injured? Flair had the hurt neck? That's what the broadcasters kept talking about.
Probably.
Okay.
So there was, yeah, but I think he actually like legitimately almost hurt his neck because the table didn't flip and break. So that leads up to the I Quit match, so go ahead.
Yeah, so, I mean, the match was pretty good. It kind of brought me back. Right, like an older style of matches, and one thing that I had kind of not really forgotten, but it just had been a long time since I've seen like a full on Flair in his prime match. But those chops, man! I mean, he was chopping wood on Terry Funk all the way.
Funk was coming back with those chops too. He had some pretty good chops.
Yeah, right? He had some pretty good chops. But I mean, it was some really just loud, crisp chops that Flair had. But And as much as Jim Ross was talking about how, like, how bad Terry Funk's chest looked, it didn't really look that bad, right? So I'm like, you know, Flair is like thinking that Flair's doing a pretty good job to get that kind of volume on his chops without really doing damage to the guy, right? That was pretty impressive. The match I thought was pretty good back and forth. There was just like some weird spots, I thought. Like a couple of just awkward spots in there that didn't make sense. But it's funny that you mentioned that, because I didn't know the backdrop to what the storyline was. But it's funny that you mentioned how Funk was coming back as a babyface and then he went off on Flair. Because I just, in my mind, I was thinking, well, going into it, I was thinking Flair was the baby and Funk was the heel. But through watching the match, it was really hard to tell who was working baby and who was working heel. Like, I kind of got the feeling that Flair was baby because he had a couple opportunities to do that patented low blow that I wanted to see that I never got to see.
Is that like one of the first like babyface matches you've seen as Flair as a babyface?
No,
because he used to do in WCW.
Yeah,
because
when at the end of this WCW,
but at the same time they embraced the whole like whenever you do a low blow, it wasn't seen as like back then. If you had done a low blow, that's a straight heel move.
Right. But aside from that, I mean, he still, like, it was right on the edge. It was hard to tell, right, that, like, who was really working baby and who's working heel. I mean, you could tell, like, you know, Funk Powell driving him a couple of times, one time on the floor. I'd say...
What are the weird spots you were talking about?
Just that pile driver, man. I gotta say, like... You know, I miss seeing pile drivers, but the Texas pile driver, man, it's
weak.
Yeah, it's weak, man. So and they, so I just thought those spots were kind of odd. I thought that Funk, like I haven't seen a whole lot of Funk matches, but that dude was selling off his ass, man. So I was really impressed with his ability to sell, and it wasn't just like physically, like verbally when they put the mic in front of him. And, like, especially when he's in the figure four at the end, he's like, oh, God, I think my leg broke. Like, some of his stuff was pretty funny. And then, and what else was there? There was something else that was, the other thing that I really liked, and it got me into the whole discussion because I was watching it with Xavier. And when they went through this whole match, they're doing all their moves and stuff, but then, like, that last 5 minutes or so, once Flair zeroes in on going for that leg, I mean, he just goes to work on that leg, and it's like, you know, this is the difference between like the psychology of a guy that's a real submission wrestler compared to someone like Miz, who does like a 1 foot DDT, and then he's ready to put a figure four on. I mean, Flair, he did like the stomps, he did the one where he puts the leg on the bottom rope and the jumps and sits down on the knee. He had shinbreaker, a bunch of kicks to the knee, and especially like Funk was selling the hell out of everything to his knee. He had a really good limp, and he had like every couple of steps he'd take, like he looked like his leg was totally buckling under him.
And didn't he like try to like slam him or something? And he couldn't because his leg gave out or something like that.
I don't remember that part. Oh, I think he botched some. It looked like there was probably a botch in there. And then one of the other awkward spots was like there was a spot where, yeah, that was it. Flair was on the apron, and it looked like he wanted to suplex Funk out of the ring, but instead of doing the full-on suplex out of the ring, he kind of just, like, put him really over gently and dropped him on, like, the apron, which that was, like, that spot didn't look particularly good to me. But overall, I mean, I thought the match was really good. And then at the end, that was the other thing that made it really confusing, because, like, Funk was, I think, it seems like part of the stipulation was Funk had to shake his hand after the match, and then Funk wanted to shake the hand. And then the manager didn't want him to shake the hand.
Yeah.
And then, like, he's like, he did it, but then, like, Flair was not particularly gracious about the handshake, right? He's like, he just grabbed his hand and then walked away and threw his hands in the air. That one looked like Flair was looking heelish there while Funk was trying to, you know, he's like, I respect you. And then Flair just kind of grabbed his hand and kind of walked off. So just, like, a couple of, like, things like that was, like, a little bit odd. But as a match, I thought the match was really good.
And what was your son think about the match? Did he like it?
Yeah, he liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was kind of impressed with Funk, too. Because Xavier's into guys that could sell. And the way he was selling, when he thought he was funny when he was in the figure four and stuff like that. The whole, and just, this isn't specific to that match, But, like, the whole thing with the I Quit matches, I think, are awkward. Because it's like, okay, you got these guys, and in a regular match, you know, they're going to go through all the same beating that they take in an I Quit match. And they're always going to try to kick out, right? So, if you got a guy like Terry Funk, who's, like, he's trying to make him, like, say I quit while he's clutching him to bring him up into a DDT. Well, first of all, anytime I've ever seen someone, not DDT, but a pile driver, anytime I've ever seen anyone in a pile driver position that long, they've always backdropped out of it. So, and why would Flair, who usually would just take the pile driver and then try to kick out anyway, now all of a sudden he's going to quit before? It's like, sometimes just with these I Quit matches, unless it's two guys that are, like, submission guys, I think the I Quit matches end up kind of being silly, unless you have, like, a really good gimmick in there, like The Rock and Matt, yeah, and Mick Foley, right?
So. Which was?
I quit! I quit!
Which is taken from a... See, a lot of people, they don't remember that, but it's taken from a promo that Mankind did. But, yeah, no, I don't want to get started with that, no, with that Rock one, because we can...
Yeah, that
it takes away from...
save that from...
Yeah. So what was the question you wanted to ask them?
So my question to you was, do you think Ric Flair was better as a babyface or better as a heel?
That's a pretty... I'm not because I was all ready to go into my spiel about why I wanted you to watch that match.
You could do that first, or...
Yeah, I could do that first. So the reason why I wanted you to watch that match was because, to me, I saw the match live. I mean, I saw it on TV when it happened, and I was just... I remember that crowd, and... just how involved that Southern crowd was. I mean, it's just, like, jam-packed. I don't know if you know, but what I always remember from that match is there's some lady in the front row or something like that, and you hear her go, "Come on, Rick!" And so, and that's... See, I didn't know the whole storyline, like, because I knew that Steamboat happened, and it was kind of funny. I wanted Steamboat to win the third match. I didn't want Ric Flair to win. And I think when Steamboat won, I kind of was like, whatever. I really didn't care.
Flair won.
Yeah. Well, yeah, when Flair won, I wanted Steamboat to win. So when Steamboat lost, I really didn't care what happened. And I really wasn't a big fan of Terry Funk.
Right.
You know, I think this was maybe during his Roadhouse days. And, you know, so I thought he was cool as a guy, like an actor. But I was like, why are they bringing about this old guy? You know, why are they bringing about this guy? This guy is, like, too old. I was like, you have Steamboat. Like, I want to see Steamboat. I don't want to see Steamboat get buried. And even back then, I knew Steamboat was going to get buried. And I was like, well, screw this guy. I mean, I don't want to see this match.
Yeah.
So I turn on the match after the first quarter of that match, and I'm watching it, and the crowd just gets me in it. And I'm just sitting there going, like, I've never heard it. I don't hear a WWE crowd get like this. This is a good match. The crowd is going crazy. And whenever you have a crowd like that, it really lends to the match. This is probably the last match that I saw before WCW really started trying to be big time. Mm-hmm. I think this is kind of the turning point match where WCW put on great matches, like really good matches. They really didn't care about the whole kind of getting the national share or being a national type company. They tried that beforehand, and that's when TBS bought it, and then TBS kind of went back to, like, okay, you know, let's go
wrestling.
Back. Let's go, yeah, because I think Bill Watts was there, and Bill Watts wanted to kind of say, you know, Bill Watts was there. He kind of brought back the old school stuff, and then you had the pizza guy take over for them, and he shoved it down the toilet. God, what was the guy's name?
Papa John.
It wasn't Papa John. If it was Papa John's scary. I mean, that guy's a flipping alien. It doesn't matter. It's basically the reason why Flair left and went to the WWE was because of the guy that took over. But this was, like, the last match to me, the last, like, solid WCW match where it wasn't national. They didn't have to wheel people in or bring people in from the penitentiary to fill up their stands. Like, people, they actually sold the house. And it was a small venue. I mean, it was a big venue. It was a big venue, but it still had this small-time feel.
Yeah.
And this was, like, the last good WCW match before they tried to become a national type presence with cable. Mm-hmm. They had the terrible run of they would film on Saturdays or whatever it was, and it was like a theme park attraction where people would come in and watch, and they'd have to hold up signs to say, like, cheer or boo, because these people, nobody knew what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when NWO came in and stuff, and then you kind of have the advent of, you had wrestling fans, but it was a new type of wrestling fan. It was people went there because they wanted to see guys be cool, you know, and they wanted to they wanted to see these characters instead of seeing the actual match. So the reason why I wanted you to watch this match was because you just, like, witnessed, like, the last WCW match. This is what, when I was telling you about NWA, and, like, you know, I was like, hey, this NWA stuff is pretty good. This WCW stuff is pretty good. It's because of matches like that. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I had you watch it. It was like the last small kind of town-type feel match that you're never going to get anywhere ever again.
Could we say it was, like, the last wrestling match before they became sports entertainment?
Yeah, I'd probably say that, yeah. I mean, it's kind of, wrestling kind of has a lot of different meanings, I think, to me. It's kind of the same thing, like, when people go, like, do you listen to hip-hop or rap? And I'm like, dude, I've never listened to hip-hop. I've always listened to rap because I grew up when it was rap. I don't want to put a label on it, you know, but to me, it was just good wrestling. You know, it was a wrestling that I grew up with. It was a wrestling that I enjoyed. I liked all the bright lights and glitz of the WWF product, but when I wanted just to see straight wrestling, straight athleticism, I went to WCW, and that was kind of like the last match. It was probably like one of the last. I want to say one of the last great matches that Flair has done. Flair's had some good matches here and there, but this was like his last like epic match, where you had Steamboat, you had all these guys, you had him with Sting, you had him with Dusty Rhodes. I mean, he had so many monster matches. This was like his last one. This was like his last great match. I thought he had some good matches in WWE, say with like Triple H, the cage match that they had for the Intercontinental Championship. I thought that was a great match. I thought he had a really, I mean, to this day, that Shawn Michaels Ric Flair match, it chokes me up every flipping time. I thought it was just a really well played drama type match. And it was kind of neat that he went through all the old spots. Like Michael said, like, he's like, I want to give you the history of Ric Flair in one match. Well, this was the history. You got the history lesson with that Shawn Michaels match, but this was like the actual like homework of doing it. So that's why I picked it. It just feels good to talk about this. Whether I liked him better as a babyface or a heel, I can't really say. I mean, because really, if you think about it, he was a baby face during the whole NWO run,
right?
But he still did his heel tactics. I mean, he was so accepted. You know, everybody knew what Ric Flair did, and you're waiting to see the low blows. Like, he even said it, like, you wanted to see his low blow, and that's now a baby face move for him. You know, it's like, and then he had like the nut grab in WWE. Yeah. You know, it's like heel tactics, but that's what everybody wanted to see.
Right.
For him being a straight heel, you know, there's no question. He is a way better heel than he'll be as a babyface. He was a good babyface, but when you want to talk about his prime years, I mean, him with the Horsemen and him being the leader of the Horsemen and the promos that he cut as the Horsemen and stuff. And he actually, I mean, he's kind of the guy. I mean, everybody wants to point to the NWO and kind of point to, say, like Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock as like making like heels become cool, like the anti-hero. He was kind of doing that beforehand. I mean, he was the anti-hero with the Four Horsemen. I mean, he represented corporate domination, but his promos were so good as a heel that people started liking him. And there was a big Four Horsemen contingent that liked him when they were heels. They're the ones that started the whole thing.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the question. Is like, was even when the Horsemen were supposed to be heels, I mean, they were so over, like, it's not really like it was a true heel run, right? So they were almost babyface at that point, wouldn't you? Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
So maybe he even was. Maybe it's even harder to define when he was a heel. Maybe he may be like the ultimate gray character, because maybe even when he was a heel, he was still over that he really was a babyface.
The only time that I saw him when I wasn't interested in him when he was a babyface. I mean, he had this thing when he went against Harley Race. It was called the Flair for the Gold. And it's just like this straight baby face stuff. And, yeah, like he's they show him with his son and like his future ex-wife and stuff and everything, his future second ex-wife. And it's just really, I mean, it was just the storytelling of that era, but it just seemed really forced in his promos. But when he was doing, at the time when the Four Horsemen were doing it, they were legit heels. I mean, I'd probably say 80% of the people hated him, and there's 20% that liked him. And the 20% that liked him, they were the first smarks. You know, they're the first people that like said, like, hey, wait a minute, these guys are way better than, you know, what they're coming off as. So heel all the way. But, yeah, I mean, I'm glad that you watched it. And I don't know if there's anything else you want to say about it.
Well, I was going to go in a kind of series here of questions. The next one would be Hogan, babyface or heel?
Oh, heel all the way. I mean, he was great. I mean, when you first experienced Hulk Hogan, I mean, you're in awe, right? Yeah. Just like me and you were. When we saw him, I mean, we've never seen a guy like this before. We never saw, like, this huge, flipping 300-pound guy with yoked out like crazy. I remember the first time that me and you saw him, we're like, man, look at this guy's arms. We're just, man, this guy's huge, right? So, and that lasted for, like, what, 5 or 6 months? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it lasted a year, but by the time that he started facing Macho Man, who do we want to win? We wanted Macho Man to win.
Right.
And we were starting to root for Macho Man because Macho Man, first of all, was a better character, I thought, mm-hmm. and he was also better in the ring. But a lot of people don't give Hogan was first the heel. He was a heel in AWA, and then they made him a face in WWE or WWF. But I mean, look what he did to poor Rocky as a heel. He was great. He was great in Rocky III as a heel.
Thunderlips,
and then
that was his first national foray into.
Well, I remember like watching Rocky, and then they had this fight. I'm like, Hulk Hogan doesn't act that way. I'm like, why is he being a bad guy?
Yeah, but at the end, he still says, "Hey, good match,
bro." Yeah. Hey, brother, put it there, brother. Let's take a picture for the kids, brother. Yeah. But a lot of people forget that when he was a heel as Hollywood Hogan, he was a natural at it. I mean, when he would, it'd be a big pay-per-view where he would lose the belt, and man, he would just waylay against it. I mean, he would take off his belt and start, you know, slapping people around and stuff. And like, yeah, I thought he was a great heel. But yeah. And I've always said that Hulk Hogan, and I don't know, and this is back in my younger days, but I said that Hulk Hogan kind of saved wrestling twice. Mm-hmm. He saved wrestling in the 80s. He kind of put wrestling into the forefront. I mean, I don't think anybody can say that he didn't. Yeah, the 70s were big and stuff, but it was a downturn, and then he really revitalized wrestling and made wrestling the thing to watch.
Yeah, like in the 70s, it was still really a niche thing, but
yeah.
In the 80s, he really did make it mainstream.
And then
it was still kind of like you had to be a closet fan, but it came mainstream. And then in the 90s, when he went in NWO, like, he actually got to the point where, you know, you could go out and wear a wrestling shirt and not really be mocked, right? You get people
I'll give credit to that to NWO, yeah. It was the NWO, it was so flipping hot when it was happening that was the case. But then they started putting these guys on.
But you got to give a lot of credit to Hogan in that, because especially if you watch, like, some of those DVDs, like, you know, they're saying, like, the original idea was to be Hall, Nash, and Sting. And there is no way in hell NWO would have got anywhere near what it did if Sting was the front man instead of Hogan. So Hogan, as much as like having Hall and Nash there making it cool, and kind of bringing Hogan into the 90s in a lot of ways,
it doesn't work without that first promo that he did. Yeah. That his promo when he turned heel was one of the best promos. I mean, you listen to it now, it stands the test of time. Yeah. It's a great promo. So yeah, you can't have that without Hogan.
Because all this trash in this ring represents all the fans out there.
The sad
thing. They can stink it, brother.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that Jim Ross says that a character really gets over when he starts being a reflection of himself. And even kind of like Flair and some other people says, like, you know, this guy was all about money. And now he was just telling the truth about it. And he was very believable at doing it. He cut great promos in the ring. He could carry promos. He could carry 20, 30 minutes of WCW with his promos for Nitro. So yeah, not, without a question, I said that, you know, that he kind of put wrestling into the forefront in the 80s, and then I think he saved wrestling in the 90s because wrestling was really bad. I mean, just really, really bad, just on both ends of the coin. And I think he saved it. He saved it twice. And the good news was that during that time, there were performers that could step up to the plate, and the performers that stepped up to the plate, like a Chris Jericho, like a Chris Benoit, like a Kevin Nash, like a Scott Hall, like Ric Flair, Eddie Guerrero, and then on the opposite side, you had Mankind, Stone Cold, and The Rock. They could all perform, and this really vaulted them. But I don't think it starts without the heat that Ric Flair, that Hulk Hogan got. I mean, those guys were they're on TV covers, dude. They're on TV back when TV Guide meant something. They're on the covers of TV Guide, and they're on the covers of People and stuff and everything. So, yeah, by all means, yeah, way better as a heel.
On Arsenio Hall, Jay Leno.
No, don't start. Don't. Why do you got to bring him Jay Leno, dude?
Because he's retiring.
Fuck that guy.
Retire.
Fuck that dude. So, any other series of questions that you have?
I'll go one more. Shawn Michaels, better heel or face?
I don't know. That's a tough one. I would probably say he's had more success as a heel when he was doing the whole boy toy thing before, with the
kid.
Yeah, I mean, he was great as a heel, very good as a heel, but wrestling was different back then. Yeah, he played the heel thing to a T. The thing with Shawn Michaels is that, to me, all this stuff was fake. When he was DX, I just felt that it was really forced with the stuff they were doing in the beginning. I thought it was fine, but a lot of people look at DX with rose-colored glasses. WWF definitely does, but DX really didn't take off until he actually left. I respect Michaels a lot. Mm-hmm. I thought when Michaels was going against kind of the whole Bret Hart thing here and there, but his promos were so bad on that. I just didn't understand the promos, and it was just everything seemed really, really forced with that guy. Mm-hmm. So I really can't say whether I like him better as a heel or a face. I'd probably say heel. Even like just recently what happened with CM Punk and stuff, he works better as a heel. But he's also one of those great guys. Yeah, to me, he's like a Ric Flair. The difference is that Ric Flair you believe Ric Flair what he's saying, at least until he started becoming old and stuff. I mean, Ric Flair doesn't have it anymore. But when he was
in talking about he inspired my Niners.
He did. I'm very happy about that.
He's getting death threats out in Carolina. He's so good. What are you talking about?
True. But you look at Ric Flair in his prime with his promos. You look at Shawn Michaels in his prime with his promos. There's no question. Yeah. I mean, there was like 2 or 3 months where Shawn Michaels was like truly, truly hot. Where I was in there like believing everything that it was, but then he quits. Then he like he gets his ass kicked, and then that happens, and then he quits because he doesn't want to face Bret Hart. So you really can't compare him to all the other people. I don't think he did business. Like Hulk Hogan, when all said and done, he did do business. Yeah, he stuck around too long, but when he had to do a job, he jobbed for a guy. Mm-hmm. Ric Flair always jobbed for a guy. Michaels hardly ever jobbed for anybody. He jobbed for Steve Austin, but he jobbed for Steve Austin because he was legitimately hurt and his back was done. He was never going to wrestle again. So there's that. I don't think you can compare the two, but probably as a heel.
Okay. Yeah, and I was just like Flair, I just thought it was really interesting because most of what I saw of Flair was his older time when he was a babyface, kind of like the last run of the Horsemen when they were kind of defying against NWO. But mostly when I think of him, it's like it's really hard for me to separate him as a heel or a face. I agree. Like he's a really great character, and he played it extremely well. For Hogan, it's just funny because it's like he had this great run as like probably the greatest run anyone's ever had as a babyface. Not technically, obviously, but just in terms of popularity and what he did for the business. And he was a true, true babyface all the way. And when he became a heel, he became a true heel all the way. And there's not too many guys that how can I say this? A lot of guys end up in that gray area. And he really successfully went from one extreme babyface to the polar opposite heel, which Flair has never really done, right? He's always been, he's a little bit more to the left or the right of center, but he doesn't really divert too much. And Shawn Michaels, I wasn't really watching in that whole Heartbreak Kid time. Like, I know he was a straight heel then, but he was a little bit more gray too. So it's funny how some of these guys are not many guys, and I don't think Hogan gets a whole lot of credit for it. Like going really extreme one way or the other and not being gray about it. Like Austin, as great as he was pretty gray at pretty much all times. And Rock is probably the other guy that did really good in his prime.
And they try to make him a heel after he was this huge babyface.
It wasn't possible anymore.
You bring up a point with Hogan, and it kind of made me remember the one thing, Dusty Rhodes did say, a lot of people have to say, was that the one guy that made everybody hate the Horseman was Tully Blanchard. Like, nobody ever liked Tully Blanchard. He was the one guy, when these guys were starting to take off, as, you know, people were starting like, well, these guys are cool, Tully Blanchard can bring them back in and have everybody hate him. Hogan was the same way. Everybody hated Hogan. I mean, we thought Scott Hall was cool. We thought Kevin Nash was cool. Like, they had all these guys, Buff Bagwell and stuff. They had all these characters, all these great characters. But everybody hated Hogan. Like, we didn't like Hogan. You know, and it wasn't towards, I mean, we did, but we didn't want to see him win. Or when he got on the mic, it's like, man, shut up. Because, you know, it's like, you don't got it anymore. You know, like, he played that whole old angle to a T. Yeah. And he's able to hold on, like a guy that holds on and holds on. He was playing his character. He was playing what he was in the WWE. He held on way too long, and that's what we hated him for. Well, he's doing the exact same thing in WCW. And I don't, it was like towards the end of his run, maybe like a year out before NWO dissolved, and it was after a pay-per-view, and I remember calling and going like, man, I'm like, Hogan was, that's like one of the best performances I've ever seen, just what he did throughout the whole show. It's like, this guy, like, and I think we slowly started liking him, and then WCW, you know, went down, and it didn't matter who we liked or didn't like, because there's changing every other week. But yeah, I mean, he was the one guy that, he was like the one uncool guy in NWO, and he kept them a heel for a long time.
Yep.
one of the hardest podcasts of my life. But I don't like it when things don't go my way. So Hall of Kayfabe.
Motley Crue's. You turn the tables on
him. Are we going to put Motley Crue's in the Hall of Kayfabe?
I'm going to turn the table on him. I'm going to turn the table on him in a wrong way.
How can you turn the table in a wrong way?
Because.
Is it a round table?
Because I did everything necessary. So, before we even do the Hall of Kayfabe, I don't know why, but I just got to thinking about that promo again, like, recently. So I went and I showed the twins. They love that thing now, man. They think that thing's just the best, right? So that, and then the one where there's like the video of the Jeff Farmer promo, but it's the voiceover of Punk, and it's funny. I think you said it before, but it's like when Punk doing that promo, when you watch it with like as the voiceover to the video, that's actually a pretty good promo. So, I don't know. It's funny. It's good, but it's getting a lot of play in the household.
In the house right now, yeah. On the repeat right
there. Yeah.
So, Hall of Kayfabe.
Hall of Kayfabe.
So, I've inducted the past couple guys.
Have you?
I don't know. No, you did last week.
You did 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And then
we did so many shows during that week. It's kind of a blur. Yeah. Because we did the Moody's, and then we did then we did one that you want to do another one that week, and then we did the week after that. So we did like three. It was like kind of
a short span.
Yeah, it was like those three pay per views they did in 1 month and stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so I'll leave this up to you because I really don't have anybody. Do I have anybody? Do I have someone? No, I don't know if I do.
Don't.
You got someone? Do I got to press pause and save it so we can hash it out, if you will? Okay. So that's what we're going to do. Hopefully we don't lose anything. So I have to hit the record button and not hit the stop play button because that usually screws everything up. So let's see if it goes. All right. So the save worked. It doesn't seem like it was that long of a time. We just spent the past hour going down the list.
It's very similar to what's been happening in Major League Baseball. You know, we had to check and make sure that there was no steroiders getting in here, and no one that was dude, rude to the media.
What the hell was up with Dan Levitard? What a stupid fuck, dude.
Yeah, and it's not only that, and then he's gonna come out today and say like, oh well, I would have regretted it. My regret was that, you know, it made it about me. It's like his whole fucking career is about trying to make a story about him. The guy fucking sucks, dude.
It's tired. It's tired of what he's doing.
Yeah. It's just, he's got quite possibly the worst sports talk show that I've ever seen.
That's the one with his dad?
Yeah.
Yeah. When his dad outshines him?
Yeah.
He brings out a senile dad and pokes fun at his own dad, and his dad doesn't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
Isn't his dad on the whole time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey Dad, I'm gonna make fun of you today.
And his dad's the star of the show. Like I'd never suggest to anyone to actually watch it, but if you were, that would be the only saving grace of the show. But he's so bad on it, and God, I love, like, part of the interruption is like my favorite sports talk show to watch. And when he's the host, he just kills that thing every time. He doesn't have any good points. Like, he's just an anarchist for anarchy's sake, but he doesn't have any salient points ever.
Well, he's not as bad as, what's his name, though? Your boy, Skip.
Nah, he's worse than Skip.
He's worse than Skip?
I think he's worse than Skip.
Wow, okay. All right. Well, I don't want to get into that. So, Hall of Kayfabe, we pick a person that never got the run they deserved. And this guy actually, as for as hot as he was, never actually got the run that he did deserve. Now, we're only going to induct this one form, probably two forms of this guy, because when he got later on in his career, we just can't, if we're to do this whole career, we just can't do it. So we're going to focus
you can't.
On...
I could, but...
Well, okay, I'd like to hear your reasoning behind that. So the guy that we're going to induct right now is... What was the name of his first team with Hammer?
Dream Team.
The Dream Team. So it's the Dream Team Brutus Beefcake, and then he became Brutus the Barber Beefcake. And I am going to admit that when he first became Brutus the Barber Beefcake, he was my favorite wrestler in the WWF, yeah. By far. Oh, by far, yeah. I just love the whole idea of this guy. And what I was really waiting for, and the reason why is because I wanted to see him become Intercontinental Champion. And you want to talk about Holly Kayfabe, guy never getting a champion run. He never became Intercontinental Champion. And he probably faced Honky Tonk Man probably about 8,000 times. 8,000 times in the span of a year he faced this guy. And he lost every flipping time, or it was a count out, or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And I remember on Superstars, they would do the results of some of the house shows. And like they would even like tease the next house shows. And like Brutus the Barber Beefcake was going to be the main event. And I was like, yeah, he's going to win this time. Well, he's got to win this time, and he never won. And when he had his run with Hogan as his best friend during the whole no holds barred era, I really liked the guy. I don't know why. I think the whole packaging, like Brutus the Barber Beefcake, he had a decent look to him. Not so much towards the end of his run, but when he first came out, and I remember when he left the Dream Team, I liked the guy. Good. Wasn't a great wrestler, but he had a good chemistry in terms of, that's not the word I want to use, he had good crowd presence. He knew how to play the crowd.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. So the Dream Team was a really good tag team and a really well-constructed team. Previously, we've already inducted the Hammer Greg Valentine, and so you had this guy like Greg Hammer Valentine who was just like a straight worker, like no nonsense, not a whole lot in terms of like personality and stuff like that. But then when you partner him up with a guy like Brutus Beefcake who... was really, he walked a really good line of being, like, really flamboyant, but still looking like a man's man, kind of, like, not going off the deep end like one Buff Bagwell, but it just worked well together to have, like, the one guy that was, like, kind of funny and kind of just out there, and then teaming him up with a guy that was just a straight, hard-nosed brawler, and then, yeah, he had one of the pretty good turns when he did become the barber at WrestleMania 3, and came in and cut off Adrian Adonis's hair. And I thought that, as much as I can stand Roddy Piper, and, you know, I could, I'm not here nor there on Adrian Adonis, but he really made that segment work, I thought, when he came out to clip Adonis's hair. And, yeah, he had a really good run at that point. Like, as odd as his promos were. Like,
what are you talking about? Well, we have never talked about that.
Yeah, I think we did. A couple of times! But yeah, he was kind of the originator.
Well, you gotta bring it back down after that.
I thought I just did. No, he was.
But you didn't!
But I didn't! But he was the originator of the promo where you start off whispering, and then you emphasize the next line really loud, and then you go back to stop talking quietly again. But he just, he did it really well. It wasn't like the content of what he's saying was any great shakes, but the promos were entertaining and they were funny enough, right? And yeah, he graduated from the little scissors to the garden shears. And I thought the garden shears was a really good gimmick too, with the little candy stripes on the, on the handles.
I feared for Hulk Hogan's fingers though, because Hulk Hogan moved his hands a lot, and sometimes he'd go back. I'm like, no, don't do it there, because you see Bruce in the background just clipping away. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then Hogan's
it was a camera trick. Like Beefcake was actually 10 feet behind him.
But smoke and mirrors.
But I thought he also played off Hogan really well too when they were in doing.
He was the first friend that Hogan had in WWE that never turned on him. The first one ever. And granted, I think he did get hurt in a water skiing accident, so he never had the chance to turn on him. But, yeah.
he crushed his face. Yeah, he had to have his face completely reconstructed.
And he was gone for a long time, and then he showed up back in WCW, and that's the guy that we're not going to, I'm not going to induct. For some reason, you want to.
I am willing to induct the Disciple. I would not induct the Booty Man or the Zodiac, but I thought at the time when they were looking for something, when they kind of needed a little boost in the NWO, I thought he came in and played that role pretty well. He reinvented himself. I guess we didn't even talk about this, and that was the other thing. As the barber, you know, he became the sleeper guy. And his sleeper was really good. His sleeper looked legit. Like, he locked it in really well. And this is a time when, you know, you could actually win matches with a sleeper. A lot of guys use it as a wear down hold, but he actually, his looked pretty good compared to what other people were doing with it. But when he came as the Disciple, he had to reinvent, and he came in with a pretty good version of a stunner, I thought. Now, he never really worked matches, but as a guy to come in, do run-ins, look kind of intimidating in the back because he had that whole biker look, and then just come run in and do stunners to keep Hogan going. I thought that worked.
Well, what worked with the stunner was that the guy that usually received it was Macho Man, and Macho Man sold that stunner like crazy. I mean, it looked like he broke Macho Man's neck. Every time he did, it looked like he broke Macho Man's neck. I mean, Macho Man just sold that thing like crazy. But Beefcake, I remember, like, I was with a bunch of kids, and, like, we're at some family function. I don't know what it was. And we wanted to play. They're like, someone was like, well, let's play WWF. And I'm like, I'm not going to play WWF. And it's like, only nerds watch WWF, baby. And so they're like, oh, we really want to do it. I was like, no, let's do something else. But they wanted to play WWF. I was like, well, who are some of the guys I can be? And I'm like, well, you can be this guy. Like, you can be King Kong Bundy. I'm like, well, what's his finishing move? He's like, well, he has, like,
a big splash.
A bear hug and a big splash. I'm like, I don't want to do that. And I'm like, well, who else is there? Like, you can be Tito Santana. I'm like, who's Tito Santana? He's like, oh, he's this Mexican guy. I'm like, I can't be no Mexican. And so, and then after that, then the Steamboat, and of course, like, was a cool name. So I was like, yeah, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Yeah, that can be that guy. I'm like, who else? And then someone's like, oh, Brutus the Barber Beefcake. And I'm like, well, that's a pretty kick-ass name or whatever. It was like, he wasn't the barber yet, but it was Brutus Beefcake. And I was like, I'm like, 6-7 years old. I don't know what Beefcake is. I don't know what a Beefcake is. I just thought it sounded cool. You know, Brutus Beefcake. I'm like, that sounds, you know, et tu Brute. Hey, yeah. Sounds pretty good. But the guy, I mean, he was like a hot tag the whole time in his match. You know, yeah, this was the era of the squash match, but it was always, but he put on a show every time. And that's what I really liked. It was like, he was an entertaining character. He put on a great show during the squash matches, because you'd watch some squash matches and they're kind of boring. You know, it's like, oh, yeah. Like the Ultimate Warrior squash matches, you're like, oh, great. You know, but then you have like a Rick Rude squash match, and that's something totally different because of the theatrics that he brought in. Mm-hmm. Beefcake brought, to me, Beefcake was on the same level as like a Rick Rude in terms of the theatrics and kind of the crowd psychology that he brought. And I just thought it worked really well.
Yeah. No, I agree. I like the barber. I like it.
All right. So we are getting close to that time. I got some good news. So on a Spreadshirt, they approved my design. It's funny. Like, I went through like 4 or 5 designs. I'm doing like all this intricate design with, like, you know, Photoshop clouds and bringing out edges and bringing out different color elements. And they're like, we can't approve that because it's like the graphics aren't good enough, something like that. And I'm going like, what are you talking about, dude? I'm like, the graphics are pretty good. Well, basically what they're saying is that they can't process because there's too many colors in there. Like, their printing isn't good enough to do mass production of this thing. So I had to dumb it down a lot. And they finally, third time's the charm, they finally approved it. So I'm going to start getting on that, try to sell some shirts, see if I can actually bring the price down on the shirts a little bit, because I do have to make my money off of that, seeing how, I'm not going to get into that again. But yeah, go to spreadshirt.com. Just do a Google search for Mood of Skill Spreadshirt, and it'll bring up on our, we have our own little shop there and stuff. So you're going to have to come with some, like, words that you want to put on your thing, or, you know, make a separate shirt or whatever it is, and I'll do that for you for free, just because I'm a nice guy.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, just like, you know, Mean Gene Oakland, right? And it's like, Mean Gene, he's not mean. He's really a nice guy. It's just he asks the tough questions, so it makes him mean. Yeah. That was on the back of his toy, remember? You read the bio and stuff. He's not a mean guy.
On the back of the box.
Yeah. So check us out there. Buy a shirt, or just wait a couple months for me to get the prices down and see what I can get away with and what I can't with, because they're very touchy with what they'll accept. So move to skill number 60. I am Bad News Ramen with my 506 followers, and we got Better Have My Donuts over here with his 49 followers. So let's try to get this guy to 50, dude. You got anything else to say?
No,
there we go.
No,
I don't. All right, so we'll check you out next week, and that's it.
Start trudging. Me and my brothers, we be looking and be bugging. Vehicles of life, they be rolling and be merging. Searching for the virgins of life that be shoving at the door that's cracked. The valleys of time are always on my feet. At least the beat will combine the calluses and corns with a funky baseline. You won't need underdog for a nickel shoe shine on the shoes that's tacked. But can I get a level on the bass and on the treble? Footing up and down like a UNLV rebel. The answer be ambitious, for we really dig acoustics. Can't be too much tracking, not too much backing. You must contain the neck at least to dip your hips and back. Your feet will be in motion, so at least realize the fact. The rhythms are inserted and the nerves can be converted. This ain't rock and roll, cause the rap is in control. If you're a megastar, will you buy you a car? I'd rather go get footing. Footprints I will be putting all over the earth, we can get there first. Now that we are in it, footprints will be imprinted. So if you recognize them, you can try to size them. They'll probably be the ones with the size not flying all over the field.